All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. This is episode 105, and it is Thursday, April 21st, 2022. Tomorrow, we're going to have L.A. Marzulli on, and we're going to talk about UFOs and some of the stuff that L.A.'s up to lately. So that should be a pretty fun interview. And I would tell you to pay attention to the YouTube and the Rumble accounts. I'm currently working on a couple of videos I'll be dropping on there soon. One should be hitting today. And the L.A. Marzulli interview and also a Bob Griswold interview will be dropping by Friday and by Saturday. So that'll be fun. With Bob, we're probably just going to talk about what's going on in Ukraine. There's a lot of news going on. If you hadn't heard, there are some mysterious things happening around the country. I'd like to share with you a little bit of them. This is from the freethoughtproject.com. Multiple large food processing and distribution plants in the U.S. have recently exploded or burned down. This is from Matt Argerist. He wrote this article. So here, let's get into it. As food uncertainty lingers on the horizon, thanks to U.S. sanctions and government decimation of the economy during the past 2 years, there is another factor contributing to the problem. Since the beginning of the year, there have been several large food processing facilities that have exploded or burned down to the ground across the United States. This week, a vegetable and nut processing facility in Duffer, Oregon, became engulfed in flames for unknown reasons. Quote, lights flickered, they heard a pop and went up there to check it out, and there was a fire. According to a report made to Wasco County 911 records listed in the Wasco County Sheriff's Department log, the independent distributor of natural, organic, and non-GMO foods, which employs around 150 people, burned to the ground. 1 week before that fire in Oregon, a massive fire brought down a meat processing plant in Conway, New Hampshire. After burning for 16 hours, multiple fire crews finally put out the fire at East Conway Beef and Pork, but the facility is completely destroyed. That same week, in Salinas, California, a massive fire at the Taylor Farms processing facility led to the evacuation of residents as it burned for over 17 hours. Taylor Farms is a major agricultural company that processes and delivers many of the salad kits seen in grocery stores. The cause of the fire is currently under investigation. Taylor Farms ranks currently as the world's largest processor of fresh-cut vegetables. Just weeks before that, a massive fire engulfed a Walmart distribution center in Plainfield, Indiana, where over 1,000 employees shipped food and other supplies all over the region. The fire destroyed the massive 1 million square foot operation. That same week, one of the largest food facilities of its kind in South Texas caught fire and burned to the ground. Prior to burning down, the Rio Fresh facility in San Juan, Texas, grew, packed, and shipped a variety of Texas-grown items to include Texas 1015 sweet onions, melons, greens, cabbage, and kale. The cause of the fire is currently unknown. In Hermiston, Oregon, in February, a massive food processing facility suddenly exploded, injuring 7 of the nearly 400 employees who worked at the Shearer's Foods plant. According to reports, the cause of the explosion, which originated near a boiler, is still under investigation. It's not only food production and distribution plants. In Maricopa County, Arizona, in March, a massive fire wiped out the Maricopa Food Pantry, which distributes food to the less fortunate. More than 50,000 pounds of food was destroyed in the blaze that lasted for 24 hours. The fire is also still under investigation. The fact is that the last year, more than a dozen of these fires and explosions have taken place at food processing and distribution centers. To be clear, general warehouses and their fires are quite common. In fact, fire departments respond to more than 1,000 of them a year. However, the main cause of these fires are arson. What's more, fires in food processing facilities are not that common and occur far less often. To claim that all of those incidents are related would be pure speculation. But given the current supply chain situation and looming food shortages, the very idea of critical infrastructure burning to the ground for any reason is unsettling, to say the least. Now, I have some clips that I'd like to present to you. One's coming from John Bound from InfoWars, one of probably my most favorite people to listen to, and you can find him on band.video. He does a fantastic job. And there are some more clips in there that I'm going to string together for you. Let's just say you're sitting here watching the news with me, and this is the stuff that's coming across my desk, the stuff that I'm paying attention to. But I just want you to know, there's a lot of movement going on across the country. You know, there's a lot of movement going on with Ukraine. And obviously, we have serious problems in this country right now. To mention Ukraine, well, we have politicians right now who are trying to tell or trying to gather strength between these politicians would be Democrats and Republicans, trying to gather strength in order to send troops into Ukraine. Now, they're already in Poland. They're already in other parts of Europe. But they want to push them into Ukraine to help support Zelensky. Already, Biden has released another $800 million to help out Ukraine, sending more and more of our military equipment. And eventually, the Pentagon is going to have to answer this question. How much of that equipment that we have sent there already do we have left for ourselves? Now, we are sending what we in the military would call up-armored vehicles, so armored Humvees, and also MRAPs, which would be a mine-resistant vehicle, and then some other troop-carrying vehicles, you know, lots of rockets, lots of machine guns, lots of explosive devices. So we're sending them a lot of ordnance. But the most precious commodity that we have are the boots on the ground. And they're right next door. I have been saying this for a while. I'm going to keep saying it. They're going to need one real good excuse. And then they're going to send the 101st Airborne, who's right there in Poland, or the 82nd, or whoever it is that's on call, and they're going to walk them boys straight into Ukraine. I don't understand the strategic need for this right now. I understand what's happening in Ukraine. But I have watched too many videos from some people who send them to me, like Miss Roxanne. She's always sending me stuff. She's one of my, probably my best intel agents that I have, or intel analysts, thank you. I'll tell you this much. I don't believe what Zelensky tells me. I don't believe what the Ukrainians tell me. I don't believe what my, obviously my politicians tell me. I was watching a video between the Russians and the Chechens, and they had an embedded American reporter with them. And they were going through Mariupol, and they were in a residential area where there was a lot of high-rise buildings and kind of rural. And it was absolutely destroyed. There were bodies all over the ground. One of them was currently burning as the reporter was approaching them. And they're talking to the people that are in these bombed out apartment buildings, asking them what type of supplies they had. Then the civilians were asking the Russians and Chechens if they could help them. They were asking the civilians what it was that was happening. And they were telling the Russian and Chechen soldiers that the Ukrainians are firing upon them. And that's why there's so many dead people laying out in the middle of this this walkway. It's because when people would try to flee, they had people that were positioned in the upper portions of these high-rise buildings, snipers, you would say, or designated marksmen. And they were just willy-nilly shooting at people for no real reason. So we have a real information war going on. We have a propaganda war going on, but there's also a real war going on. People are dying. Children are dying. You know, people are being bombed by the Ukrainians and also by the Russians. And unlike what everybody else wants to say right now, people want to go over to Ukraine. They want to fight against Putin. They want to sound heroic and they want to do all that, you know, great stuff. You know, if that's what you feel like you need to go do it. I'm not going to stop you. I'm going to tell you that you're stupid and you're foolhardy for doing it. There is no winning this war. Russia will overtake Ukraine, or we will step in and repel them. And then God knows what happens after that. But I see too many videos, and it's probably propaganda. You know, most of it is propaganda. But I've seen it too many times when the Russians come in to these cities and towns that are on the western border of Russia, the eastern border of Ukraine, especially in the Donbas region, and they are given a hero's welcome. They're given a hero's welcome. And you can sit there and you can watch the Chechens and the Russians who will sit there and tell you who they are fighting are neo-Nazis. They're fighting Nazi propaganda everywhere. They're finding, you know, even amongst the ones that they kill, they have Nazi propaganda on them. I have to ask our politicians, are you sure this is the route you want to go? You know, I can't support a nation that is willing to align with a Nazi party. You know, I would feel better. I'll give it to you like this. I would feel better if the United States military were brought in. We created a buffer zone in between the Russians and the Ukrainians. And we, you know, help to, I guess you could say, establish some demilitarized zones, a DMZ. And we started to actually have, you know, debates or some sort of political talks. It's just not happening, though. You know, you have the hammer and sickle that's being raised across parts of Ukraine, but at the same time, you got the swastika flying on the other side of it. So whose side do we choose, America? What would the World War II vets think right now? I think we're being put between a rock and a hard place. I think we need to tread very carefully with Ukraine and Russia. We need to probably be worrying about ourselves more than Ukraine and Russia. You know, it's like an ideological war right now. The communists versus the Nazis. So, know, I don't know the good answer here. I know Zelensky said that they're prepared to fight a 10-year war. Well, there's already been a 10-year war there, and we helped start it. So we are implicated in this, no matter what it is that we do. So it's just, I don't know, fellas. It's time that we reevaluate what America's position will be on the world stage. It would make us look better if we just walked in, you know, with the bigger stick, and we told everybody, you go to your corner, you go to yours, we're standing in the middle, don't even look at each other. You know, like you're separating two children. But, you know, we're talking about two children who both have nuclear weapons. Thankfully, none of those have been fired yet. But that can change. That can change any moment. And we also have the inevitable threat of the power grid failure in America. I know I talk about that quite a bit. When I was a part of DHS, that was a big thing for me. And even whenever, during that time, my agency was under CISA, which was the infrastructure agency, I learned quite a bit. And it got me very involved and intrigued in all this, especially when it comes to the grid and SCADA systems, and then the ability to use cyber warfare to infiltrate and to take down these power systems, the computers, the processors. Man, I'm telling you, we're too connected. A lot of you don't understand. We're way too connected. Just do your own research on SCADA. I did, gosh, I think it's a 3 or 4 part series all on EMPs and the infrastructure. So if you want to reestablish that, you know, in your mind, get a refresher course. Go to the AmericanVindictiveShow.com on the first page, scroll down. I don't recall which episodes they are. I think they're in the 30s. And you'll see where it has the EMP specials on there. Listen to those. Everything that I give you is directly from government documents. So, without further ado, let's watch the news.
This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test.
The next clandestine move for the architects of the Great Reset, following the pandemic vaccine rollout that is slowly happening, killing millions as I speak, will be known as cyber warfare.
Imagine one day you woke up to find your phone was dead, your bank account was empty, and when you turned on the faucet, nothing came out. You can't go to a neighbor for help because they're all in the same situation. You have no idea how it happened or even how you could figure that out. Don't start freaking out just yet, but this reality could be a lot closer than you might think.
And just as the pandemic was publicly forecasted amongst its conspirators months before its rollout, so too it goes with the coming cyber warfare predictive programming of the flip of the power grid kill switch.
Cyber attacks must be treated as a serious threat by our leadership, the highest levels.
Look, today my administration issued new warnings that based on evolving intelligence, Russia may be planning a cyber attack against us.
We've already seen with the Colonial Pipeline and with many others, it's not just stealth of data. It's shutdown of critical infrastructure. And we've seen it with Colonial Pipeline. We've seen it with hospitals. We've seen it with factories that were shut down. And many of these attacks are activated by private organization, private criminals, but some of these attacks are also behind them. There is government-sponsored attack.
But which governments have embedded what is known as the Swiss Army knife of malware into critical infrastructure? All signs point to the United States government.
It was looking for these things that are called PLCs, or these small computers that control things like factories, like the power grid. What you see here is the code that is put onto the PLC, and This is the normal process. Code goes on to the PLC, turns the PLC on or off, and controls it.
As the Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency wrote in their alert for the APT cyber tools targeting ICS SCADA devices, the Department of Energy, the Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency, the National Security Agency, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation are releasing this joint cybersecurity advisory to warn that certain advanced persistent threat actors have exhibited the capability to gain full system access to multiple industrial control systems, supervisory control, and data acquisition devices, including Schneider Electric programmable logic controllers, Omron Sysmac Next PLCs, and Open Platform Communications Unified Architecture servers.
There is an energy producer in Texas who has identified a very serious malware instance in their system. This malware is not just in systems like a Windows, Vista that is sitting in one of these plants. No, it is in the Schneider Electric Programmable Logic Controllers. That's a PLC. It is in the Omron Sysmac NEX PLCs and the Open Platform Communications Unified Architecture servers. Some of this stuff could only be put into these devices at the manufacturer. And so when I asked our dude named Ben Protector of Megawatts, he said, what does it look like to you? These guys look at this stuff all day long to say, Russian? Because the Russians are the ones that people really do fear. If you got the ghost in the machine, these guys are good. He says, this looks like our guys. Without making a formal accusation, of course. Of course, there's people who are doing reports on it, but it is not the hold on to your ass because the lights could go out in Texas or New York or anywhere. This would be the one, and they're not making a big deal out of it, which makes me highly suspicious.
This move will plummet civilization into chaos and total submission unless you are one of the lucky few that has already made preparations. John Bound reporting.
Activate a block news desk. We have a breaking situation going on just to our south. This is in Salinas, a huge fire at a food processing plant. This is for Taylor Farms. And right now there are concerns about a huge plume of ammonia coming from this area. And they have an evacuation in the immediate area as well as a shelter in place all the way out to Highway 68. Now emergency authorities are warning us that they could end up closing down parts of 101. In Salinas. Again, this is in Monterey County. This food processing plant went up late last night, and it's just grown. It looks like it is a total loss right now. We've seen several roofs collapsing. This was in a cold storage processing plant where apparently a welding project sparked a fire in a wall, and that eventually spread to the attic of this huge facility. No people or produce were inside the plant, which was actually closed for the season. It was set to reopen on Monday. So we are going to keep an eye on all.
Hey, Shelly. Well, we last got our update about an hour ago, and the incident management team tells us they haven't been able to get a more updated acreage of the fire because of the continued wind conditions, but they say it's likely over 850 acres. That was the last map acreage that they did have. Now, the incident management team says they are getting FEMA fire assistance and getting more resources to help contain the big hole fire. All day today, fire crews have been putting in containment lines to try and push back the flames. Although there is not an evacuation order in place, the incident management team is urging people to be prepared to leave at a moment's notice.
But if we're making that order, it's because we know that lives are in danger. We're seeing that all over the state right now. 24 hours to see three massive fires is pretty telling. And we're in April.
It has been challenging to fight the fire because of the wind, and changing some of the containment lines is something that they've had to do. Earlier, there was a break in the wind, and Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office helicopter was able to do a few bucket drops. The Valencia County Sheriff's Office does have a trigger line on the east side of Yerba Road. If the fire gets close enough to that area, they say that's when they will have an evacuation notice in place. Now, the incident management team here in Valencia County says they are aware of fires going around the entire state, so they're trying to put out this fire as soon as possible in order to try to send more resources to help fight other fires in our state right now. Reporting live in Valencia County, Stephanie Muniz, KUAT Action 7 News.
It is too warm and too dry out west. This is video from my old stomping grounds. What's up, Front Range? Looking here out in Larimer County, this is a Lions fire in Colorado. And this is still burning at this hour. And there's a lot of fire danger off to the west. This is an area where beetle kill is a huge problem. You see just swaths of dead trees, and that is easy to burn up, especially when conditions are like this. Critical fire danger today. New Mexico along the Front Range of the Colorado Rockies and out onto the eastern plains, too, with winds that could be up to or even excess of 70 miles per hour. The east slope of the Sierras, they could possibly see those high wind gusts. Let's take a look at your local forecast now.
Warren is live at the evacuation center.
Our meteorologist Iris Hermosillo tracking the fire dangers today, but we do begin with our Allison Rodriguez leading our team coverage from the fire station. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. And I just want to let you know I'm live here at the command center where more than 200 firefighters, this is where they're stopping to get ready to battle this fast-moving wildfire. The sun finally up, and we can start to see the haze over the mountains here through this area. And overnight, you could actually see a little bit of the glow from the wildfire that is burning right now. So I want to get you caught up with what we know so far. And the images from this fire, they are unbelievable. So I want to tell you, this tunnel fire, it began a Sunday afternoon. It was fueled by dry brush and high winds. At least 16,000 acres, the newest numbers, they've burned. And the Coconino County Sheriff's Department confirming that. They say about 24 structures, they've been destroyed. We don't know exactly how many of those are homes, but from the map, we have seen this fire is active in several neighborhoods. Now, the Coconino County Board of Supervisors, they've declared a state of emergency, which is going to help get emergency funds to resources. You know, less than a month ago, Governor Doug Ducey gave his annual wildfire outlook, telling Arizonans they can expect this year to be, quote, very extreme. The Forest Service has requested several additional resources to help with this firefight. A Type 1 incident management team has been requested here. They're coming from the Pacific Northwest. They'll take a few days to actually get here, and they handle the most severe and complex of wildfires.
Tonight, new images of Russian-backed troops surrounding a steel mill in Mariupol, Ukraine's last stronghold there. And an urgent plea from the Ukrainian commander holed up inside, warning without help, his soldiers could be down to their last days or even hours. Saying there are 10 times more Russian troops around than us. Major Serhiy Volina telling me in a video message they're still defying Russian demands to surrender, and civilians are taking shelter there, too. There are women and children among them, he said. They, too, are under constant shelling. U.S. officials tell NBC News the Biden administration is considering a new military aid package for Ukraine, including artillery and ammunition. Though Ukraine's President Zelensky is saying help is still not coming fast enough. If we had access to all the weapons we need, we would have already ended this war, he said. All as Russia reveals its first test launch of a new intercontinental ballistic missile. President Putin saying it gives, quote, the food for thought to Russia's enemies. Though the Pentagon says Russia notified them in advance and that the test was routine and not a threat to the U.S. or its allies. As Russia intensifies its assault in the country's east, they're solidifying their occupation of the country's south, raising Russian flags over government buildings, planning to introduce Russian currency, and appointing pro-Russian officials in cities like Melitopol, where Mayor Ivan Fedorov was kidnapped by Russian forces and later released.
Because citizens don't want to live in Russia. It's understandable, and all the world sees it. We don't want to live in Russia.
sparking fear that Russia plans to never leave.
Well, the critical issue now for Ukraine is, will these new weapons from the West arrive in time? The Pentagon saying tonight that howitzers have arrived in just the last 24 hours, and more weapons are expected to arrive tomorrow.
From drones in the skies to targeted missile launches on the ground, the war in Ukraine is heavily dependent on technology. But a four-star general at the Pentagon says Russia is interfering with the U.S.-provided GPS signals in Ukraine.
Ukraine is unable to access GPS because it's being jammed locally on the ground.
That's right. Ukrainians may not be able to use GPS because there are jammers around that prevent them from receiving and using the signal effectively.
While Russia and China have their own GPS satellites, most of the world relies on the GPS provided by the U.S. for free.
Thank you.
It's up to the U.S. Space Force, the newest branch of the military, to watch over the orbiting GPS satellites from this command center in Colorado.
Each satellite actually broadcasts multiple signals, so the civilians get their signal, the military gets their signal.
Interestingly, the Russians and the Chinese can use our GPS satellites as well.
I bet you they do.
And GPS has become a vital everyday tool, from suburban drivers to international shipping, to farming, to banking, to disaster response to those Ukrainian military units. Meanwhile, Russia has also reportedly jammed the GPS systems used by civilian aircraft along its borders with Finland. So far, U.S. commanders say Russia has not attacked U.S. GPS satellites in orbit, though it did test fire a weapon, destroying one of its own satellites.
They were also making a very clear statement to us about their intention to threaten our capabilities.
Saber rattling in space and on the ground. Tom Costello, NBC News, The Pentagon.
I don't know how long this war will last, but as we approach the two-month mark, here's what we do know. Putin has failed to achieve his grand ambitions on the battlefield. After weeks of shelling Kyiv, Kyiv still stands. President Zelensky and his democratically elected government still remain in power. And the Ukrainian armed forces, joined by many brave Ukrainian civilians, have thwarted Russia's conquest of their country. They've been bolstered from day one by an unstinting supply of weapons, ammunition, armor, intelligence from the nations of the free world, led by us, the United States. As Russia continues to grind out the military advances, and their military advances and the brutalities against Ukraine, Putin is banking on us losing interest. That's been my view. You heard me say this from the beginning. He was counting on NATO, European Union, our allies in Asia, cracking, moving away. He's betting on Western unity will crack. He's still betting on that. And once again, we're going to prove him wrong.
All right, well, that's what's going on in the news. Still think now is not a good time to prepare. There are all different types of scenarios that you should be prepared for. Currently, the thing that's happening right now, obviously, is coming into spring and into summer. The land's very dry, and fires are very prevalent. The wildfires move extremely fast due to the high winds and straight line winds out here in my part of DFW. We get them very bad. We've already had our own fires just within a mile from my own house. So, you know, you need to be prepared for that little bug out situation. And, you know, we've mentioned wildfires before for the needing to bug out. It would be a very prevalent reason for why. Do not stay and try to fight the fire. You're not going to win with a garden hose. Even with all the resources that we as man can come to bear against a out-of-control wildfire, sometimes we can barely tamper it. And honestly, it's driven by the wind. So probably one of the best things that you can do, to protect your house is to have your valuables, like your birth certificates, social security cards, your wedding certifications, any type of important matter of materials, paper materials that you need, important documents. have those in some sort of a file that you can pick up and throw in your car. You know, the other part of that would be to have a plan for you and your family to evacuate. I would go ahead and tell you to have something on the standby. If you live within a high fire zone, have something on the standby sitting outside in a tote or in your garage waiting for you to come and grab it and throw it in the back of your car. Do not be the one, while you're being told to evacuate and you're being waited upon, you're having to run around the house and frantically grab stuff and knowing that you're going to miss valuable things here and there. You know, worst case scenario, you just put it all back later when there's no longer the risk of fires. But that's my personal opinion. That's what I would do if I was in that situation. I would have all my articles and materials that I need day by day. I would have them so that if it needs be, I can break my house down in about 10 minutes and be in my car and be leaving. You got to understand that the way fires move, the reason why first responders are trying to get you to move out of that area is because once that fire crosses the road, nothing's getting across it. You know, you have to put the fire out before you can cross the road. And even then, it's going to be dangerous because everything's going to be extremely hot. And with fire, you also have the threat of explosions from propane tanks. You have the threat of explosions from gas lines. You have the threat of falling power lines and obviously power outages or brownouts because of the fires. So a lot of things can quickly deteriorate. What happens when the power goes out? You're not going to have access to water for very long. That means you have to go buy it. Have cash on hand. Always have cash on hand. At least a couple hundred dollars. Here's the other part. Have food on hand. Don't count on your ability just to go down to, you know, Walmart or, McDonald's just to buy your food. If it's that dire of a need, you may be completely rerouted in another direction due to the fires. And fires jump. That's one thing people don't understand is a fire may be cordoned off in a certain area, and then due to the high prevailing winds, those embers will be carried upon the wind and debris, and they'll land on just the right pile of dead leaves, and the fire starts back up again. Also, during these times of fires, arsonry is a big deal. There are plenty of cases where people have committed arsonry and set tens of thousands of acres on fire, which even led to deaths and to property damage and infrastructure damage. If you also consider the fact, knowing just how easy it is to start a fire and how quickly during times like this that it can spread out of control. It has been something that we have known for domestic terrorist groups like Antifa and ELF, and that's the Earth Liberation Front, and some of these other radical groups to actually use wildfires as a form of terrorism, of eco-terrorism. So keep that on your mind. You know, when we talk about preparation, I always talk about grid down. But I want to give you another scenario that is very real, and everything that you've listened to so far are things that have hit the news within the past 24 to 72 hours. So they are currently occurring. For everyone who's in Arizona and New Mexico, and you're dealing with these fires, my heart, my prayer goes out to you. I have drove through those areas. I never experienced it myself, thankfully, but I have drove through those areas, like in California, when everything is scorched. So I understand your loss, and I understand what it is that you're going through. And we are here for you. And if you're one of the victims of those fires and you feel the need to reach out to me, please reach out to me. We'll see what we can do in order to help you. But I'll tell you this much, ladies and gentlemen. We're just warming up. The fires are out of control, but we're just warming up. We haven't seen the nuclear fire yet. So, you know, keep that on your mind. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Okay, and welcome back. This is American Vindicta. I got something cool for you. So one of the listeners, Joshua, he just sent me this. And thank you very much for sending me this, Josh. Now, this is from ReclaimTheNet.org. It's an article wrote by Christina Mass. You always give credibility to the people who write articles, by the way. That's like a big thing in this industry. So it's titled, Amazon Palm Scanning Payments Have Arrived in Austin, Texas. Yippee hooray. Here we go. In Austin, Texas, Whole Foods shoppers, it would be a Whole Foods. It would be a whole, it, bunch of hippies. Whole Foods shoppers can now pay using their palm. The Pay by Palm service is enabled by the Amazon One devices, which links a user's palm signature to their debit or credit card. Their palm signature. How much closer, ladies and gentlemen, do we need to get to the mark of the beast? I'm telling you, they are creating the infrastructure and the technology for the mark of the beast. All right, let's continue. Amazon One is all about making everyday activities like paying at the store easier and more convenient for customers. We built Amazon One to offer a quick, reliable, and secure way for people to identify themselves or authorize a transaction while moving seamlessly through their day. Well, what about COVID? What about the 6 foot, you know, part away from everybody? What about how everybody was Febrezing everything or spraying Lysol and everything? You know, now you want to put your palm on a pad that everyone else is putting their palms on? And how do you know that it's not taking your palm and your very personal signature of the fingerprints and then the markings and indentions in your skin from your palm scan and cataloging that? Every time we get a little bit closer in technology, we get a little bit closer to slavery. This article goes on to say paying using the Pay by Palm device takes about a second. While it is convenient, the technology raises privacy concerns. Yeah, no joke. Senator Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat, John Ossoff, a Democrat from Georgia, and Bill Cassidy, a Republican from Louisiana, sent a letter to Amazon questioning the company's data collection through Amazon One. Well, that's probably a good thing, but let's see where that goes. Quote, Amazon's expansion of biometric data collection through Amazon One raises serious questions about Amazon's plans for this data and its respect for user privacy. including about how many use the data for advertising and tracking purposes, they wrote. While unveiling the technology in 2020, Amazon said the Amazon One device is protected by multiple security controls. Yeah, our government says that, yet we get hacked all the time too. The images are encrypted and sent to a highly secure area we custom built for Amazon One in the cloud, where we create your palm signature. You know what's really funny about the cloud? As I remember when the government was transferring all their sensitive materials and logistical administrative stuff that's done online, we were transferring everything to the cloud, and we were all joking with the tech guys within DHS, like, hey, how is it even, you know, like, actually well protected? And some of them laughed and said, it's really not. Kids can break into it. They do it all the time. And some said, you know, it is protected, but it is not protected. It's a working progress. So all of our materials, it's in a secured working progress, right? Well, the same thing with your sensitive biometric data. Now, Austin is the second city after Seattle where Amazon One is available. The technology is available at 9 Whole Foods stores in Seattle. So it would be Austin. It would be Seattle. I'm sure Portland's next. And then San Francisco or, you know, some sunny San Diego area, or D.C. Well, probably not D.C. Or New York, most likely. But this is this is going to create a whole new awareness for cyber crimes, because there will be people who are going to attempt to take your biometric data and use it themselves. Now, that's, you know, that's some spy stuff right there. I understand that, you know, printing fingerprints and wearing them on your hands. But that technology is there. People can do that. So why would it not be a figurative of our imagination and not become real? You know, speaking of the biometric data, in Ukraine right now, the Ukrainians are using biometric data that we originally established in Afghanistan and Iraq, something that we called the BATS system. And I remember whenever we first had it, it's a camera. The damn thing almost never works. You take a picture of somebody's face, and then you take a picture of their iris. And we started in small villages and towns, and anyone that we came across, we would picture and identify. And it would more or less be linked to Interpol, and that would then be spread across the world through all the different, you know, three-letter agencies, and that's how we would find people that are terrorism-related. And now that same style of technology is being used by the Ukrainians, and they are identifying the Russian soldiers that are either captured or killed, and they're telling the parents or the loved ones of the Russian Federation soldiers that they have either been captured and tortured or that they have been killed. You know, this technology can be abused mightily. And it's scary, the direction that we're going. I do enjoy the banter with people like Elon Musk on Twitter. But Elon Musk and some of the others that are out there are on the verge of creating artificial intelligence that will become, from what these experts, what they say will become sentient. And by that point in time, once they become sentient, they become a problem. A problem that can compute. A problem that can compute situations and scenarios in microseconds, or teraflops, or nanoflops. You know, they can process things millions of times faster than our brain. And that that does not bear well for us, because based off of cold, hard analytics and stats, just stats alone, these machines, once given too much power, can decide that we are too much of a danger to ourselves and to others, and then to use the access of power that they have to take it away from us. May seem, you know, a little bit out there. This stuff's real. It does exist. You know, I've met some of these scientists, and if any of you are familiar with Steve Quayle, which, by the way, please support Steve Quayle and his show. Make sure you're signed up for his QCast. But I'll tell you this much. These people that speak about the technocracy to come, I would rather fight a World War III than the technocracy. And I say that because at least with the guns and bombs, we have a chance to see who's going to be the victor, or if it gets bad enough, to call a parlay. When we talk about fighting the Cybernetica, the Borg assimilation, we talk about, you know, the Terminators, the Doomsday scenarios, we no longer have these varied options anymore. And we ourselves will have to make cold, calculating risks every day. You know, it's a good sci-fi film to watch, the whole Terminator series. But if you really get into the the problem of the artificial intelligence, you get into those conversations with these people, every single one of them will tell you that it's a ghost in a machine. It's a demon let loose that we can't put back in the bottle. But yet these people are still creating it. They're still dabbling with it. And it seems like there's going to be no stopping them. But this is what these people will say will be needed for progress, for the human civilization to move forward in time. We will need and we will subject ourselves to allowing these artificial intelligence, these artilects, to help manage day-by-day lives. I mean, it already is happening with our infrastructure. It was something that we talked about in the very beginning with the SCADA systems. You know, these SCADA systems, these little microprocessor computers are controlling through ones and zeros the opening and closing of valves of every single you know, major piece of infrastructure, from gas to oil to water. All it takes is one little break and everything breaks. Just wait till the artificial intelligence is in charge of everything else, and then it breaks. Or it decides to have a bad day because it's given itself its own emotions. And we have people who are working on developing emotions for computers. For the life of me, I don't understand why. We people can't control our own emotions, so I don't know why we're going to give the robots emotions. But we'll see. It's gonna get kind of dangerous the more we get into this. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for you right now. Like I said, tomorrow we're gonna have L.A. Marzulli on, so we're gonna pick his brain about as much information as possible, and it's gonna be a fun, thrilling hour. He's probably one of my most favorite people to sit back and just to listen to. And I've hailed one of those skulls, one of the remakes of the skulls, of the Procus Peru skulls, and it's trippy to hold it and to stare it. And I have great big hands. I wear double XL gloves, so it's kind of small in my hands. But the whole skull itself is kind of small, and just I can't get my mind wrapped around what these people or creatures would have even looked like. But we're going to have LA talk to us about that. And like I said, it's going to be a really fun conversation. If you like this show, please spread it with your friends, with your family. If you want to donate, please go to www.AmericanVindictusShow.com. We do have a donation button on there. There's also the P.O. Box address that is on there. So for those of you who don't trust the internet anymore, based off of what happened in Canada, and I don't blame you, and you do feel like donating to support this show, please send your donations that will be to the P.O. Box. And for everyone who has been donating, if you did send anything through the PayPal, please send me an email so that I can have a physical address for you, because I have a gift that I'm working on that I'd like to be able to send out to you to show, you know, my appreciation. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for you right now. God be with you all. Please stay prepared. The world is ever-changing and evolving and always chaotic, but we are always strong and rooted in our God. My name is Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out of here. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.